Well, good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to the Secular Foxhole Podcast. Today we have a very special guest. Bosch Fosten is a cartoonist, creator of the anti-jihad superhero Pigman, and winner of the Muhammad Cartoon Contest. Bosch, how are you?
Very good, Blair. How are you?
I'm doing really, really good. It's great to have you here today. We're the theme of our show. I wanted you on especially for this theme. It's freedom of expression.
Yeah.
And America is undergoing a horrible case of self-analysis.
Mm-hmm.
About everything that made America great.
True.
And would still make America the leader in the world if it weren't being undercut at every avenue. But anyway, tell us a little bit about yourself, Bosch, and let the audience know who you are and what your intellectual journey.
Sure. I was raised by Muslim Albanian parents in the Bronx, New York. Born and raised there, raised Muslim. We were, as I often say, we were pretty moderate, quote unquote. But the Jew hatred, the contempt for women was immoderate. Almost every woman in my family was beaten by either the father or their husbands, which were arranged marriages, which I call deranged marriages. We went to mosque maybe once or twice a year. We were that lax. And when we went to mosque, it was pretty funny because it was a Brooklyn mosque. We lived in the Bronx. The mosque that would take us was in Brooklyn because we were considered white Muslims. It's different kind. And there was an imam at the mosque. He was Arab who spoke in Arabic. And I could see the resentment when we walked in because he, I guess, felt that we weren't as serious as the more swarthy Muslims from his perspective. And also the fact that some of my cousins used to fart in the middle of the prayers. And looking back, I used to get pissed off because I was like, what the hell is this, man? This is supposed to be a serious thing here. But looking back, I guess they gave it the respect it deserved. But I was raised in that kind of passive, Islam. And I remember every so often there was an attack, there was something going on. And at about 15, I said, I don't think this has what I need. I don't think Islam is what I require. When I started to take morality seriously, I said, this is not what I have in mind in terms of, looking at life. And that's when I left Islam. It wasn't quiet. It was a lot of pushback from family. But I knew I needed something, so I discovered Ayn Rand. And I discovered her through the Fountainhead film. And I watched a film when I was a teenager, and I said, there's something going on here. It's more than just this film. And I understood that to a simple extent. I didn't really understand the further ideas that it was, delivering in the movie, because it was very simple, direct movie. But that's when I was speaking with a woman, and I said, there was a movie called The Fountainhead. I said, there was something about it. She goes, have you read the novel? I said, no. She goes, you will love the novel. I said, okay. And that's when I read it, devoured it, read Atlas Shrugged, all of Rand's nonfiction, got into objectivism. And that was the flashpoint in my life.
Now, how old were you again?
Probably at that point, 18, 19.
Okay.
Yeah, 18, 19. It was a few years after leaving Islam. I was exploring, I was trying to find certain ideas, certain writers that I liked, but no one, and I mean nobody, came close to what Rand was delivering in her work, in her philosophy, in her novels. And the idea in her novels where you can learn the philosophy through the actions and words of her characters, that was important to me as an artist as well, because I do see Rand as the greatest, most realized artist I've ever come across, ever. Mm-hmm. More than any other artist, painting, movies, directing, comic book art. She is the most fully realized artist I've ever come across, because she created an entirely rational world of heroes that can almost overtake any in literature. And it was a profound impact on my life. And then, 9/11 hit, and that for me was another thing where I had to revisit the religion of my parents. And I asked myself a question, are these devout practicing Muslims, are these the true believers who flew planes into those buildings? Because I didn't know for sure. I had to find out. We had a Quran in the home that was in Arabic. Can you hear me, guys?
Yes.
Yeah, you dropped out for like 15 seconds. So you were at the Quran.
Yep.
Yeah, had a Quran. You had a Quran in your home.
Yes, we had a Quran in the home. It was in Arabic. It was on the shelf, and it was just there for just to be there. They couldn't read. My parents couldn't read it, so I had to go and find out which was one of the best translations. And I found out through, I think, Robert Spencer, Daniel Pipes, that it was one N.J. Dawood. That was a good translation. They said it didn't mess around with the core of the text. So I learned that, and I discovered that, yes, indeed, these were Islam's true believers. And the way I put it now, these were Islam's heroes. You know, because they say, why aren't all Muslims, you know, flying planes into buildings? Well, you know, like in every culture, heroes are a small minority. Mm-hmm. The same in Islam. They're the true believers. They will take it to the ultimate limit, and that's what they did. And that was a profound thing in my life to, you know, go through, and also to just be raised in that and to be part of that to some extent. You know, I wasn't a devout believer, but it was not guilt that led me, but it was just this desire for vengeance. And knowing I would not join the military, I'm not a soldier, I knew that I would respond to it through my art. And that's when I started to develop Pigmen and taking on not just the physical enemy, but I want to take on the ideas of Islam as such, not alleged deviant forms of it, but Islam as such. And that's why I have the story with Pigmen on one side, then his creator on the other side. It's a two stories within one. And his creator takes on the ideology of the enemy, and whereas Pigmen takes on both the ideology and the physical threat. And that's where, you know, and then from there, the Charlie Hebdo massacre. I remember Charlie Hebdo had their offices firebombed in 2012, I believe, 2012.
That sounds about right.
And it led me to draw Muhammad again. And every time a certain attack, I just drew him. And then January 7, 2015, when they, you know, that horrific massacre of the offices of Charlie Hebdo. And then a few months later, Pamela Geller, Robert Spencer had an event in Texas that was supposed to be to announce the winner of the Muhammad cartoon contest, which I entered a few months prior to that. And I had a good inkling that I would win because I won the People's Choice Award. And then Pamela invited me to go to the event. And I said, did I win? She goes, I can't tell you that, but just be here. Went there. You know, I did my speech. I won. And then within about a half hour after all of our speeches, there was an attack by two Muslims who were in touch with ISIS. It's referred to as the first ISIS attack on American soil. But we found after the fact that the FBI was in bed with them because there was an FBI agent who was egging them on, pretending to be a Muslim. And he was at the event in a car in front of the jihadists, and he drove off as soon as they left the car. So the FBI was going to allow Americans to be killed. They were going to allow Americans to be killed. And that's why, you know, it's a corrupt institution. It's an evil institution. It's the KGB of America. And they've proven nothing less in the last, you know, 6-7 years since. But that's a whole different story. I can get into that. But yeah, so that's the basic flashpoints of my life that led me to where I am today. And I continue doing my work. I continue to draw Muhammad. I published 7 books. I got 4 comic books. I've drawn Muhammad over 500 times. I did contact the Guinness Book of World Records. I said, hey, I think I've drawn Muhammad more than anyone. What do you think about, you know, acknowledging that? They said, we'll get back to you in a few months. It's been a few years, but.
Yeah, they're not interested.
No. No,
now, let me ask you, were you drawing or were you scribbling as a younger child?
Oh, yes, from day one. All kids draw. I just continued.
Yeah.
I just continued, and I took it seriously. I loved superheroes, loved comic books, always got them at the corner store. And I did have a desire to be a comic book artist. That's why in my early 20s, I asked myself, what do you really want to do? Because I kept going from career to career, acting, directing something, you know, being a band. And I said, okay, get serious. What do you really want to do? And I said, I want to tell stories in comic book form. And that was it. And that was
Bush.
It.
Yes. What did you think about Mr. A, Steve Ditko?
Oh, yeah. I love the idea more than the execution. Mm-hmm. Because yep. I do think that he was a little too didactic. He was a little too, mm-hmm. yep. you know, he spelled things out a little too much. Like, you know, literally he's in the alleyway teaching philosophy to these thugs who would never, ever learn and never mm-hmm. want to learn. Mm-hmm. And I thought that got in the way of his, you know, of his good message.
Yep.
I think he needed a good editor. I really do. I admire the effort that he took. I also admire the fact that he had his hero not save villains and be willing to kill them if he had to, because that was, you know, in the comic books, not killing is the only morality of superheroes. Not killing, nothing else, but just don't kill. And that's pathetic. That's some leftist gobbledygook.
Now, you're talking about, is that modern or is that throughout comic book
history? Throughout. I mean, throughout, because, you know, when Ditko did that, it was a shocker in those days. It was in the 70s.
Yeah,
when he had his hero ignore that a villain was about to die, he didn't give a damn, and you know he was called every name in the book. You know, Ditko. This is monstrous. This is, you know, where these people, they end up, you know, to the point where even like Batman and Batman Begins allows Ra's al Ghul to die, and he says, "I'm not going to kill you, but I'm not going to save you," and that was considered even, you know, radical by a lot of leftist fans, you know, which is ridiculous. But that's where we are. And the same thing happens today. You know, the same thing happens today where, you know, Pigman goes after the jihadists. He kills them with his bare hands. And I'm called every name in the book, you know, by those who are willing to, by those who are at least willing to acknowledge it, because many aren't.
I know. I've seen some of your hate mail, tweets, whatever.
Yeah.
I want to bring up another name in recent history, the Dutch film director Theo van Gogh, who's the, I believe, the great grandson or great great grandson of the artist.
I think great great yes, great great grandson, yes, correct.
And he was just murdered in the street. And
yes, he was. And there was a movie that Pamela Geller made called "Can We Talk?" What was it called? Damn it! Along these lines, where "Can We Talk About It?" Because that's what Theo van Gogh told his murderer as he was being stabbed. He was telling him,
"No, can't we talk about this?
Can't we talk about this?" And that, to me, betrays the attitude that he had, the lax attitude he had about this enemy. I don't think he understood it as much as he believed he did, because they would butcher you on sight if they can. And he was maintaining his regular bicycle ride in the neighborhood. Where everyone knew he would be, where he would go, his office. And they took advantage of that completely, this one Muslim. And he's stabbing him to death. And he's telling them, you know, can we talk about this? So it's a horrific thing. And it was, you know, very, if he was, you know, well, he was pretty left. He was, you know, politically. But that didn't matter. He crossed the line and he criticized, you know, Islam, which you can't do, according to leftists and Muslims.
Mm. And Bosch, another one that have crossed the line and Blair will continue, is Salman Rushdie.
Yes, at least according to the Iranians and to Muslims worldwide. You know, he acknowledged this one aspect in Islam. I don't know the full details about it. I read the book twice. I reread it every so often, the Quran. But there's some passages in there where supposedly Muhammad got some passages from Satan. Mm-hmm. And it's an embarrassing thing within Muslims. They don't want it to be acknowledged by the outside world. And he crossed a line into that and mocked it and used it in his book, The Satanic Verses. And ever since then, I think it was 1989, mm-hmm. He's been a wanted man. You know, he marked for death. And he had a fatwa put on him by the mm-hmm. Ayatollah. And it has no expiration date. He will live with that for the rest of his days. And he was attacked a few weeks ago in America. In New Jersey, in New York, from they called it a New Jersey man attacked him, because that's the most important, you know, fact about that would be murderer. But he did not, I guess, have the appropriate security, which I got to say, it really surprised me. A man mm-hmm. who has lived with a fatwa for over 30 years did not have any security or any proper security, because the guy got to him incredibly easy. And he stabbed him 10 to 15 times. And supposedly he's going to lose an eye. He got stabbed in the kidney. He hasn't spoken yet, but I imagine he has a lot to say, and I'm looking forward to what he has to say.
I bet.
Yeah.
No, and of course, Iran denies involvement.
Of course, but they blame him.
Yeah, I know. We touched about it in what we call the green room, and I caught a tweet of yours the other day, and we talked about it. It's where you say systemic leftism is the real problem or something like that, and I just burst out laughing. Talk about that for a second.
Yeah, it's just this idea that we are infiltrated by an alien foreign ideology into America that is dominating our politics, our news, quote unquote news. We have no news. Our media, our institutions, our education system, our entertainment. When it comes to video games, comic books, movies, every single aspect has been, infiltrated. Has been by these individuals who hate the country. Absolutely despise the country and want to unmake it. And I think that is our greatest threat, because we can't survive an enemy within that is within every important institution of ours. We can't, ultimately. We have to defeat them with better ideas, and we do have better ideas. It's just that the conservatives are not going to do it. They can't do it.
No.
They can't bring themselves up, first of all, to call the left evil. They're not even good enough to do that. So, it has to be objectivist. It has to be at least, fans of Ayn Rand who understand the seriousness of what we're facing here. Because we can take on most enemies. We can, do away with them. But when we are controlled, when we are blocked from telling certain things, from saying certain things in certain institutions, when we are looked at by this enemy within that I call the left as criminals, we're not merely opponents. We're not merely intellectual, people who oppose
the loyal opposition or whatever you want to call it.
Exactly. That's long gone. And that's long gone. They see us as criminals, and they want to criminalize whatever we think, whatever we say about them. And that's why I think this is the greatest threat that we face. And once we start getting comfortable with that idea that we do face the systemic leftism within America and, globally, ultimately, I think we could begin to fight it, at least to begin to speak about it in those terms and to begin to condemn it in moral terms, which, again, the conservatives won't do, haven't done. And they still refer to them as liberals, which is also incredibly stupid. These are not liberals. They are not at all. They've devoured. The leftists have devoured the liberalism within the Democrat Party, within the institutions, and they want to do us in from within. And by not acknowledging it, by not fighting it head on, we will ultimately allow it. And that's why we can't allow it. We cannot allow it. It has to be fought.
I know liberalism is the term for freedom, for capitalism,
exactly right.
For individualism.
Liberalism. Absolutely right. Classical liberalism, that's what they call it now. But those are even long gone in a lot of ways. You'll have a flip. Like, you'll have Bill Maher say something that's somewhat rational, somewhat decent, and then he falls back and still votes for these rat bastards. So it's like he's unreliable, completely unreliable. But he has some good things to say. And he is consistent about religion, where he condemns all religion, including Islam, which most leftists do not do.
Yeah. It's interesting that you say that, Bosch, because here, lately, I don't know how much it has spread around the world, but a guy called Paludan has done a thing about stretching the line here to expressing freedom of speech by burning a Quran.
Yep.
And Blair and I have talked about what would happen if we would burn other books as an example. I don't think personally that's the best example to do it. But here in Sweden, we have a good stance on freedom of expression. But now you hear from the left side and others that this has now cost the society over 40 million Swedish crowns with all the protection and so on. And still he gets harassed and mocked and also so on. So this is interesting. Do you see any pattern here?
He has the right to do it.
Yep.
He has the moral right to do it, even if not the legal rights. Some I know some areas in Europe are really, they're getting to the point of criminalizing these type of things. But he has the moral right for sure. And again, if it's your Quran, do with it whatever the hell you want. You want to read it, You want to throw it in the water. You want to burn it. You want anything at all. You want to cut it up, go for it. It's yours. If you take someone else's Quran, that's a different story. Yeah. But that's the whole idea. It's like the flag burning. Go for it. Yeah. Yeah. Just don't take my flag.
Yeah, and that was an interesting example that we included in the show notes. A guy called, I think it was Omar, but I could be wrong.
Yes.
And he's originally from Egypt, but here in Sweden, in order to be safe and not to be kicked out, he had to burn the Quran, because then he could show that it's not safe to be kicked out to Egypt. And he has now started a podcast. He is doing comedy and all kind of things, and that's pretty interesting, I think.
It is.
But you have to take that kind of measures in order to say that.
Well, you know, he understands the issue clearly, because you know, you have to practice, you have to exercise it. You can't just talk a good game, because I get a lot of people who tell me, oh, I am a free speech absolutist, and then when I tell them about Muhammad cartoons, well, they don't want to go there, they don't have me on, they don't want to share my cartoons, they don't want to do anything about that, but they call themselves quote-unquote free speech absolutists, which they're not, because to me, the ultimate form today, unfortunately, but it is what it is. That's the ultimate form of expressing freedom of expression, to draw Muhammad, to talk to condemn Muhammad, to mock him. And if you don't believe, if you don't support that, then you truly do not support free speech. You do not. I don't care how you tell you. I don't care what you tell yourself. You can't tell yourself, well, I believe in free speech, but Muhammad cartoons shouldn't be drawn. You are helping them. You are helping, you know, you're helping the monsters get away with this.
Yeah. And I want to do a bit of big backstory, and then Blair, you could continue. We have a new Islamic party started here called Nuance. And it was a guy who he tried to infiltrate, you could say, a so-called farmer party or centrist party, and then got kicked out. And then he started his new party, and he's putting himself on all kind of ballots in different communes or different locations in Sweden, and then he will move there where he get most of the votes.
Right.
And they will probably take lots of votes from the Social Democrat Party and so on. And here in Sweden, you have lots, and I'm for free immigration and wherever you want to go to the world. But here you have a big opportunity for this kind of new party. And there you could see how drum up things through social media and other things, like that the social agencies are taking away their kids and all kind of things. And that spread through, you know, YouTube and other things to Iran. And the backstory, you know, with Muhammad cartoons, it was from the beginning in Denmark, it was that children would write, how do you look at Muhammad, please write. And then it was spread all kind of their own versions, and it got, you know, ahead of things. So this is interesting how they want to play out there.
They want political power.
And also connection with, for example, this guy has connection to the Grey Wolves in Turkey, that is a fascist organization. Hmm. So they have, you know, Swedes that are living in Turkey that are, I think, probably will be able to vote also. So, yeah, please continue, Bosch.
No, I'm just saying it's, you know, the more of a foothold Islam gets into the West, the less peaceful, the less free, the less, you know, Western those areas become. That's just a fact. The more Muslims you get, and also this idea where, look, I am all for individual immigration, individuals with their families, they go anywhere they want. They want to come to America. But there is something happening where it's the Western governments going out of their way to bring in massive numbers of individuals who have no experience in civil society, who do not understand, you know, freedom, who do not understand the civilized world the way we do, bring them into here for votes, for who knows what pathetic thing that they want. That's a problem, because that's unnatural. They are going out of their way to bring aliens into the country who do not understand our societies and who would not have come otherwise unless they got that big push by our governments. Again, you got individuals who are dissidents in the Islamic world. Maybe they left Islam. Maybe they're passive Muslims. They want to get the hell out. Go for it. You know, and we want those kind of people who do not see their countries as good, who see them as restricting their freedoms. But when you have people who believe in what those countries push, and there's no, they want to come here and push that on us.
And when they get enough numbers, that's what they start doing. I mean, they start having these, mazuns, they call them. It's the calls to a prayer in the middle of cities in America, in New Jersey. These prayer calls, 5 times a day, and it's not an entire Muslim area. You have some non-Muslims in there, and you have to suffer through this sound. It's insane to me. Mm-hmm. That should not be allowed, where it spreads, it just runs roughshod over those who are not Muslim. Because, hey, man, we got the power now. We have the numbers, and we're going to make this area more Islamic. They have no-go zones, right, in Europe and even sometimes in America. And, of course, they deny them, but they do have them. They have their own laws. Police are afraid to go in those areas.
I didn't know they were doing that in Jersey.
Yeah. Yeah.
I didn't know they were doing that in Jersey.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just to me, and I lived in Jersey years ago, and I would never have believed that would have happened ever in my life. But this is where we are, where it's an imposition of these foreign. And again, America has its own problems. We have the conservatives can be problematic. They can be weak. That's my main problem with conservatives. Yeah. But when it comes to these foreign ideas, when Islam and leftism and socialism, these are the problem. And to infiltrate our culture to the extent that they have, we're in trouble, and we're in a fight for our lives, because we have to double down, triple down Americanism to fight this in as honest a way as we can. And just, it's a battle. It's a never ending battle. And those who think that, we can win at a certain time. No, the fight for freedom is always, it's a never ending battle. For the rest of my life, I will fight for it. For the rest of our lives, we will all. Anyone who loves liberty will fight for it for the rest of our lives. Well, it's just that's the way it goes, especially in a world that doesn't want it in a lot of ways.
Yeah, they don't. No, I mean, what was Jefferson's quote? The fight for liberty, or the cost of liberty is eternal vigilance or something.
Absolutely.
Like that. I wish I could remember it exactly.
Yeah, and then also there's another quote attributed to him, whether it's true or not. The blood of tyrants have to be, spilled every few generations. I mean, it's a powerful statement, whether he said it explicitly or not. I understand the intent of it, because there are tyrants that are always waiting in the wings, always.
Yeah, we are drifting steadily towards authoritarian.
We are.
It does, left or right. I mean, there's even a faction of conservatives who, they're fed up with they blame liberalism and they for all the faults of America, and we have to get tough like the left. Yeah, so I hope they don't gain any traction. But just a couple more things I want to discuss with you, Bosch, if you haven't dropped off our call.
Blair, can you hear me? Martin?
Yes, I hear you.
Okay, good. Yeah. Sam Harris, could I mention something with Sam Harris?
Yes, please. I think I muted myself there just for a second. That's
okay. Sam Harris was someone who I admired about 20 years ago, maybe 18 years ago, whatever. It was not long after 9/11, the End of Faith he wrote. Mm-hmm. I read that. I read some other books of his, and I admired his consistency with condemning all religion at large, including Islam, and calling Islam by its name, Islam, and saying that Islam is the problem, not any alleged deviant forms of it. And he ended up on Bill Maher's show against Ben Affleck.
Oh, gosh.
And Ben Affleck was a complete emotional mess, saying, that's racist what you're saying. And then he goes, and then Sam Harris said something really strong. He goes, Islam is the motherlode of bad ideas. And then after that, everything came crashing down. My respect for him crashed down. His credibility crashed, because not long after that, he apologized for saying that. He said it was not a really good way of putting it. And then he ended up in bed with Majid Nawaz, who is a leftist Muslim in England. And he started then using terms other than Islam to refer to Islam, such as Islamism, radical Islam. I called him on it. He goes, no, it's different. I said, no. I said, that's, you sold out, more or less. I mean, you had a strong position. And then after you met this guy, you wrote a book with him. And then he's only gotten worse. Now, look, Trump, for all his flaws, for all, whatever anyone can think about him, he is not the threat that the left is or that the Biden regime is. He's just not. And the idea that he's an existential threat to the world is preposterous. And that's what Sam Harris maintains. And Sam Harris was on a show called Trigonometry. And everything was going well until Trump came up. And he basically conceded the idea that you can lie, you can cheat, you can do anything against Trump because he's like an asteroid, man. And that's what you got to do. It doesn't matter your principles. To hell with principles. You can lie, you can cheat, you can do anything you want to stop this guy. And so he is basically confessing what a lot on the right believe happened about the election fraud, about the collusion with the leftist, the media. It's, you know, fraud by a thousand cuts. He basically gave more fuel to that. And of course, he came out and tried to deny it. And no, he said what he said. He's a grown man. We have to take him by his word. And he has become, and then on top of that, he said, yeah, maybe objectively Hitler's worse than Trump, but, and then he says, Osama bin Laden, you know, he was like a mensch, you know, compared to Trump, you know, I mean, you gotta, he actually said this, is irrational. And this is also to the point where the quote unquote new atheists, they have no moral base. They have nothing like objectivism. They just have this lousy altruism that they puke out as their form of morality, and that's it. But when he tries to vilify Trump to the point that he's not as good as Osama bin Laden, a mass murderer, and maybe technically better than Hitler, but he's lost his mind, and I've lost all respect for him. I mean, all respect.
Yeah, it's I'm trying to. My view of the Trump years was I was surprised he got elected.
Yes,
same. And way. The country ran. I mean, the country was better for 4 years.
It was better.
I mean,
objectively,
$1.60 a gallon and going down for gas. Yep. I mean, not just that though. Not just the gas. I think. In my mind, Obama was the first fundamentally anti-American president.
100%. He made the major damage. And we're dealing with it now with the Biden regime. The same through life.
Third term.
Yep.
And Trump was, in his heart, he's pro-America, even though he's not the intellectual giant that he hopefully need.
But let me say something about
Flynn.
Now, I think it's, now you say that, and I agree. But some objectivists and some others, right, they, I think, want to, it's like he's anti-intellectual. It's like they want an intellectual in there. We've had intellectuals, okay? We've had them in there. Yeah. I don't want a quote-unquote intellectual necessarily. I would like it if someone was completely rational and articulate and everything, fine. But this idea, it's a snooty idea where it's like, ew, he's not really, he doesn't speak like me. He doesn't speak my language. That's gross. That's how I see it. That's why I see some of the criticism. It is that vapid. And some of it is legitimate. Absolutely. I called him out through his entire presidency, but I said, you know what? He's done some damn good stuff. And I'm going to acknowledge that.
You know, it basically frightened the worldwide left out of their minds.
Yeah, it did.
And that's what happened with the virus and the Russiagate. Yes. They were anything they could do to smear him, to crush him, to get rid of him. And unfortunately, they succeeded.
They got away with it. They got away with it because even, you know, you got these little trickle, you know, like Mark Zuckerberg goes on Joe Rogan yesterday and admits that the FBI pressured him to squelch the Hunter Biden story. And because they called it misinformation. Now, the FBI knew since 2019 that was an absolute true story. That's a fact. They had it in their possession. They had the laptop, 2019. So they were lying in order to try to, and again, I call it fraud by a thousand cuts. Any means necessary, and by any means necessary, stop this guy. And Sam Harris outed a lot of people in that way. And that's why no one's coming to the defense of Harris in a lot of ways. I have always gotten people to defend him because I made a cartoon. I called him Sham Harris. And I said, he's a Trump drunk. And he was just burping out the word Trump. And I usually get Sam Harris fans to defend him. Nobody has come to defend him on my posts. Nobody. That's the first. You know, because they're like, damn it, Sam, you outed us. You basically gave away the idea that we were willing to do anything to stop him. And what does anything include? Fraud. on a massive scale, you know, fraud by a thousand cuts on every single level, the individual level to the institutional level. But that's a whole different story. You know,
Martin is quiet because I don't know if he's heard this from me before, but anyway.
And we'll do a follow up. What maybe Trump did same thing as Reagan did, open the door to the you know, religious right. And
But
that even though, Trump is pretty passive with his religiosity, I think he just, you know,
I think so.
I mean, I think he, if not an atheist, he's truly agnostic. Mm-hmm. I think he pandered to them to some extent, which most politicians do. I just think that he, comparatively, when I still see today some of my old friends condemning Trump as loudly as they did while he was president a year and a half into this Biden regime, I can't believe it, actually. I'm like, guys, we have a clear and present danger in the White House today. And I'm not talking about Biden. I'm talking about the entire regime. Yeah, and you're going to talk to us about a year and a half ago, that guy who was there. They are so terrified that he might get back in. But I tell them also, I said, guys, you voted for Biden. You said that's the only way to save America. And you are, in your own way, guaranteeing a third Trump win. You know, that's what I call it. But that's a whole different thing. But you are guaranteeing a second Trump term by voting for Biden, by still condemning Trump while Biden is president. This utter disgusting mess of a presidency. Everything has gone to hell on every level. They had the disinformation office, by the way, which was just, you know, that to me, when the government wants to tell you what's true, what's not true, we are living under authoritarians. That paused right now.
So that was good.
Yes, it was paused and now it's supposedly officially killed. And I still don't believe it. I think they put it on ice.
It's on ice. Oh, yeah. I mean, it's there. It's there.
Somebody and you know what? Even, in the future. Yeah, even some conservatives like Rick Santorum, you know, I doubt he has any kind of pull that he had years ago, but that's the kind of guy who's dangerous as well. Where
Senator Hawley.
He's really
very dangerous.
They're placing the religiosity above the country, some of them, and there's a growing religiosity among pundits, which really puts me off. I can't listen to the podcast I used to listen to. Because the religiosity has just taken over to the point where it's like, it's destroying whatever good they had to say.
Yeah, I know. It's sad.
It is.
But let's talk about the show again. As I said, it will be published on September 2nd, which is a significant day in the greatest novel ever written, called Atlas Shrugged.
100%.
And
the greatest novel ever written. 100%.
The greatest novel. And probably ever. For the next 200 years, it'll be still great. Yeah.
I would agree.
And next month, of course, is another anniversary of 9/11. And as when you and Andy were on our show last year to commemorate last year's anniversary, I said it, and I'll say it again this episode, we remain unavenged. Do you believe that or not? Uh-oh. Martin?
Yes.
Are you there? I'm here. Okay.
Yes.
All right.
I hear dogs in the background.
Yeah, those are my dogs.
Yeah.
But Bosch is gone. So he left at 40 minutes, almost 40 minutes exactly.
Yeah. Well, that's why it's good with the wailing.
Yes, I know.
Can you hear me?
Yes. Okay, sorry. You're back.
Excellent. Okay. I drew something like from the street level. You're looking up at the towers. I made them in black. And you're looking up at them. And the letters coming down from the top of the towers are the unavenged. And I was trying to convey the horror of individuals who chose to drop to the street instead of burn to death. And even though I drew it, even though it still gets me, even as I'm talking about it, because that kind of horror we've never witnessed before. And that was across the world seen, that we said these innocent individuals were just going to work that day.
Yeah.
To go back to their families at the end of the day. And they never had that chance ever again, because of those who take Islam seriously, because of those who, unlike some of my friends say, this is an act of faith as much as an act of war. And they just say, it's a political ideology. Really? Since when do people, in the name of politics, fly goddamn planes into buildings? It's never happened. Unless you're, you know, you believe fervently in your ideas, like the Japanese kamikazes to today's quote-unquote Islamikazes, as this one book referred to them as. It is, they are unavenged, those nearly 3,000 Americans, unavenged. Yes. And every single administration has been guilty of it, from the Bush years to the Obama. Trump, to some extent, he was better than them. He was willing to kill the general, the Iranian general who killed Americans in Iraq, and did so proudly with no hesitation. And he didn't go into unnecessary wars where, meaning, like Bush goes to Iraq, because, again, this is I will stand by this no matter what, because he saw, you know, Hussein as more of a gangster looking commie guy, because he didn't wear religious robes. He wore suits. Mm-hmm. And it was, and his neighbors hated him, and he was at war with, you know, Iran for what, a decade at that point. The Saudis hated him, so it was the safest bet. Instead of going after, the Saudis and the Iranians. Anyway, that's a whole, you know, I've dedicated my life to trying to wipe out the enemy in a fictional way through my comic book.
Yeah. But and your man, cards, you're so playing far. Cards.
I'm sorry.
You're playing cards also.
Oh yeah, I have Muhammad playing cards. I do. I have Muhammad playing cards, and I draw him as the queen, as the king, as the jack, as all these characters, as the Joker. And it was fun. And you know what? I didn't think I could get a producer for that, like a card maker. And I was right, because the person who I contacted, they said, okay, we'll do it. And then they said, oh, we can't do this. I'm like, okay, next, boom. I finally got one. And they didn't hesitate, which is, I gotta say, I'm impressed sometimes, because I do get surprised at digital comic book platforms, at printers. I have a printer in America who has printed every single last thing I've done. And I've done things that are considered criminal, according to Islam. And I'm lucky. And I've never used that word. I used to always say I'm fortunate, all that. I'm lucky. I'm lucky to have them. I'm lucky to work for the Freedom Center. David Horowitz's, you know, the Freedom Center. Yes. I do covers for their pamphlets, for books. Right. I do weekly cartoons for them, weekly cartoons for Jihad Watch. And I am flat out lucky to be able to do that, to maintain what I do. And still, it's I'm a lucky man. I am.
Yeah, and I look forward to your print then, September 2nd. Do you want to say something about that?
Yeah, I drew that years ago, and not to get into something else, but I drew that as a pitch. Mm. I drew that as a pitch for an adaptation of Atlas Shrugged in comic book form, graphic novel form. It was part of my pitch. And I loved the way it came out so much that I said, you know what, I'm going to make it into a print. Mm. And it has, you know, the sun setting. It's gold, fiery, and it's pretty bold the way it's done in the perspective that I chose. So yeah, that was part of a pitch to produce an Atlas Shrugged graph novel, and I love the way it came out, and people seem to agree.
So Blair, we will have that for next year, because I'm not sure that will come, arrive on time.
You know what? Shipping has
with
been
the postal office and so on in Sweden and others, but it's on its way. So I appreciate that very much, and thanks. I read your thing on Facebook, what you have been happening. So I want to support you in a way.
Thank you so much. I had a terrible accident, and this. Yeah. Thank you.
And then we could talk about, if you maybe want to say something more, Blair, but I want to end the show also how you could support our show, and also how support we have got. And we talked about Rand's Day, and the previous episode was about Rand's Day Boost, and the number 221905, so Rand's birthday. And that's also a number of satoshis. It's about, in fiat money, it's about $50. And that I sent to guys called Dave Jones and Adam Curry. That's protecting, preserving, and enhancing the free RSS feed and the podcasting ecosystem, that you have a freedom of expression, that you will not be deplatformed. It was something recently that happened on a podcast conference that you probably will see in your Twitter feed about Daily Wire and this, but we maybe have opinions about, but he went there. What's his name now, Blair?
Ben Shapiro.
Yeah, he went there for a quick. He didn't have a pass, but Daily Wire. Yeah, and then it was a total.
And they act like King Kong walked into the building.
Yeah,
yeah.
So this is like I want to see on a positive note at the end, and also that you could, I mean, you don't have to agree, but that kind of, as you said, it was like Dave Jones said, it was like he was like uranium or something like that.
It's unbelievable. Yeah. And look, so, I mean, I can disagree with Ben Shapiro at times, I do, but sure. Overall, you know, he's right about a lot of things, and he says it well, if a little too quickly, but. that's insane. I saw that. I said, are you kidding me? But this is their idea. They're trying to vilify to the point of making people toxic. Yeah. And he is as middle of the road as anybody, Ben Shapiro. He does not take on truly, truly controversial topics. He does not. He truly does not. So it's, you know, for them to see him as that kind of monster. And again, it's a projection only. It's to try to make him appear as such when he's not. By the way, guys, just one of the links that Martin sent me, it was, there were certain writers, they were reading aloud from Salman Rushdie's book.
Yep.
And it was, that to me is a great sign, because it's Pen America, the New York Public Library, Penguin Random House. And they said, stand with Salman, you know, defend the freedom to write. That's important. And two of the individuals I know of, one, Paul Auster, who wrote a book that was adapted into a graphic novel by David Mazzucchelli, City of Glass, I believe. And then another guy who read a passage from the from Salman Rushdie, Asif Manvi. As far as I know, he's a nominal Muslim. He interviewed me on the Daily Show years ago. And as far as I know, he's still Muslim, but I don't know 100%. But if he still is, how Muslim is he if he would side by Salman Rushdie? You know what? Good, because his Americanism has dominated his belief system, clearly. Well, and good. That's good. Yeah. Yeah, that's good to see. I like that.
Yeah. Well, we have covered some negative topics, but I'm going to use a quote from Miss Rand. It's philosophy that got us into this mess. It's only philosophy that will get us out. 100%. I believe she was too modest to say it's her philosophy.
Exactly, because that's the only one. And you know what? I find it amusing that people act like the philosophy is not here yet. It's here. It exists. It is the best we have. And this idea where we need better ideas, we have them. We have far better ideas than any that the conservatives and libertarians and elders will profess, far better. And they still try to deny her existence, which, you know, it's just the power of her work, though, to still be as radical as it is, but also getting into the culture in a way that it's like a Rush Limbaugh was made better through reading Rand. He was made better in his form of communication with his audience because of that, not because of his religiosity, not because of the Bible, because of Atlas Shrugged, because of her work. That's what made him better. Yeah, did he acknowledge it honestly, openly? No. But those, you know, she always comes in indirect ways. In a lot of ways, she will always come with people where she has made these individuals better in expressing their ideas about freedom. Mm-hmm. And no one has said it better than Rand. And she just needs more acknowledgement from these people who crip from her, and they definitely do.
Oh my God! It's an epidemic.
It is. It really is. And just they refuse to give her credit. It's like it's.
And that's in a way. Yeah, and in a way, what I did there with Rand's Day's boost, that will be acknowledged because now it's on a so-called an official. A list, so you, people and individuals and objectivists could support us and others with that number. So I want to end, Ben, about how you could do it in different ways. You're doing it with your work, great work, Bosch.
Thank you.
We are doing it with our podcast and your podcast with Andy Bernstein, another thing. Yep. So here we got a guy called Kieran Down, and he reviewed our podcast on his podcast called Mere Mortals. And he have sent us some support here, value for value. And he said here with on the beginning of August, or 20 August, he said, really encouraged to see you trying out things like GitHub, Martin. I have yet to take the plunge, but feel the same appreciation of breaking stuff rather than helping out. And then he sent 1,067 sats. So that was a reference to this RANS boost 221905 that I added on this GitHub list, getting help from James Crindlin. And another one here, he wrote like this. Let's see here. And then he sent 5,333 sats on August 3rd. Fantastic timing for this episode. And that was when we had with Andy Clarkson. I'm just starting to read Aristotle's Ethics, and this series might be useful. I always appreciate the philosophy with a tie to concrete examples or actionable next steps. Too much philosophy for me sits almost exclusively in the mind with little to use in the real world. So this is like a fellow podcaster and also then supporter us and have done a review in his words about our show. And this is amazing, I think, how we could do. So I see the opportunity for the future, Blair. And
yes.
Bush.
Yeah, excellent. Thank
now
you.
We're we're downloaded in 80 countries.
Yeah,
excellent.
So that's so the money has to follow sometime.
Yeah, and but that's the thing. It's like what you did, Bosch. Not asking for sacrifice or
right,
see, feeling pity, but you said you and this is the flow of social media. It could be a stream of things. Maybe you don't catch it, but. When I saw that, and I saw, and I got, okay, I want to do something, and I have to do it now because I saw it.
I do appreciate it.
We don't want to have anyone that feel pressured, but this value for value.
And that's the thing. I said, look, if you ever wanted to buy some of my stuff, now's a good time. And people came through, and I really, really appreciate it.
Great.
Because it's, my work, it's a tough sell at times.
Yeah,
I got, there was a criminal in high-speed chase from the cops, totaled my car. No insurance on his end. I spoke with the prosecutor. They said, "Yeah, we'll get back to you in a few months." I haven't heard back from them. My insurance was limited, but at the same time, there should have been some kind of recompense. And I'm stuck in a hole, more or less. No car. And I look at the prices of cars compared to what they were last year. It's insane.
Yes,
for the same type of car, $4,000 to $5,000 more than it was even last year. So,
yeah.
I got to figure this out. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, a good use, solid use car is what I've been going for in the last two purchases.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I had, and my car was very safe. It was very safe. It saved my life, more or less. It was built to take some kind of hit. It was a Japanese car. So it was built, and it was called Very Safe, 5 stars, and it lived up to it. It died, to save my life, but it is what it is.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, Martin, unless you've got anything else, I think I wanted to say, give the quote from Miss Rand about philosophy to that kind of wrapped it up for me.
Well, thanks, guys. Awesome. Thanks for having me, guys. I really appreciate it. It was a pleasure. And I got to say, every time I'm on a show, I particularly thank the host, because a lot of people won't have me on. They talk a good game, but they just won't have me on. So I really do appreciate it personally. Thank you.
You will return. We will ask you again.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
My pleasure.
Thanks for manning the foxhole with us, Bosch.
Thank you. I love that title, by the way.
Thanks. Yeah.
Thanks.
All right. That's a wrap.
All right, guys. Thank you. Thanks again. Take care. Bosch. Be well.